Hey, Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the DH Pellegro episode. I met DH a few years back. He's always been very cool to me. I have a hip-hop background, but he was actually our first punk rock guest. But I enjoy the Dead Kennedys, and my favorite part of his episode was when he talked about his move from Missouri to San Francisco, starting off his whole trajectory as a drummer and a member of the Dead Kennedys. Thank you for tuning in. Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show. We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome the drummer from the Dead Kennedys, the ex-drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, actor, right? Am I missing? What's the other one?
Author
and writer, D.H. Pellegro. All right.
Yeah. Booyah chaka.
I'm so happy you're here, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
You know what? This was always.
It's funny you were playing piano earlier because I just took some piano lessons because, you know, I got this acting class and I had to play Ray Charles, right? From the movie Ray.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So, dude, you wouldn't believe the involvement. I went to the Braille Institute for a couple of days, hung out with a bunch of people there, blind people, heartbreaking. Because a lot of people there are recently blind. They've just lost their sight. So they are in this world of darkness where they don't kind of know what's going on. Oh. And you have to relearn things all over again. Man. And it's so tripped out and heartbreaking. But you see the struggle for life continuing with these people, man. And, it was just like mind-blowing and mind-opening and beautiful. Man, yeah, I mean, you know, you see guys, you know, people there, and they got the sticks, and, you know, there's all kinds of programs where you can go and volunteer your services to, you know, to read to them, to pay their bills for them, because again, like I say, they're newly blind, bro, and it's like, it's a thing.
How'd you get involved with this?
So, I mean, you know, for researching my part for Ray Charles, yeah. That was kind of a part of the deal, and previously I did a thing called A Patch of Blue, which was Sidney Poirier and this other girl, Catherine.
That's
something.
That's the OG right there.
You know, that's way OG. That was in the 60s. And like,
hey, wasn't he in Night of the Living Dead?
Sidney Poitier?
Was he?
I don't think so. He's a kind of a class A actor. He ain't doing the Night of the Living.
Let me throw a movie out there. Craig, you're the movie guy.
Yeah, he was into Serve with Love. Yeah.
Oh, God.
To Serve with Love. Lilies of the Valley. Patch of Blue.
He's the OG, though. He's the OG, right?
What was the big one? Was In the Heat of the Night, I believe, was a big one. Yeah, with Carol O'Connor, a bunch of redneck dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all racial stuff.
That's crazy.
That was made back in the, you know, made back in the day. But, you know, again, you know, I did that. And I took piano lessons.
Yeah.
And, like, the dude was like, dude, it's so hard. And then you close your eyes and it's like, wow, where are the keys? You can't find the keys. And it's
they do it through feeling? Like maybe they could feel it out.
Yeah, you can feel it out, but you got to memorize and know where the notes and keys are. So, you know, and they were talking to like Jamie Foxx, and he was my teacher worked with Jamie Foxx, and he went up to Ray Charles' house for 6 months.
Where is that? Like in Malibu or something?
I don't know exactly where it is. I would want to say... You know, it could be in Brentwood. It could be
yeah.
It could be in Baldwin Hills even. And for 6 months, and he just kind of doubled
That's
everything.
Crazy.
And then he came after 6 months of doing that. Then he had to break it down, and there was a big board over the piano, and he's like, and he had to start playing blind, and it was like, wow, a whole nother world. And getting around blind is kind of a trip.
Well, like Stevie Wonder too.
Stevie Wonder,
heavily musically gifted, but that kind of like, you know.
But I tell you one thing, man. When you close your eyes, your senses, boom, they pop open,
man.
You're like, what's that? I smell something. You hear stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It is just your senses are heightened because you know you don't.
Have you tried drumming blind?
I close my
eyes. Or like with the closed. I mean, not blind, but closed.
Not a whole full set blind. But there's stuff that I can do just blind. Just, I mean, because I'm not looking. A lot of times, I'm looking out at the audience. I'm looking at the band members to keep them together.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really looking at the drum. You know, I'll look.
Man, this is a historical day for the Stevie
Wonder
Show.
Baby!
Because you're our first, not only, I'm so happy, I love you
so
much.
The brother.
Our first punk rock.
Oh, come on.
Guest.
Man. Yeah. Oh, wow.
We've had rappers. We've had DJs. We've had comedians. We've had...
Come on, man. But you're our first, and you don't stop.
You're our first...
Come on, you got to have the punk.
I know, dude, but you're our first one. You're our first one. But this is a good start. This is a good start.
Why are you holding... Why are you,
this is a good start. I want to get into it, man.
Let's get into it.
Because this dude...
I feel like I'm like a sex machine, man.
You done paid your dues.
Like moving. Get into it, man. Can I count it out, Steve? Give me the 1, 2, 3, 4. Get up.
Boom. So, man, like, when did you start drumming?
When did I start drumming? It was a long
time. Or where are you from? Where are you from? Were you raised in Los Angeles?
No, I wasn't raised in Los Angeles. I was born in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up there until I was, 17 or so. And then, then I moved to San Francisco. I think I started drumming at about I was 11, 12, 13, somewhere around there. You just start doing stuff. I'm I didn't think about numbers and the age and trying to keep time. It just kind of came natural.
Just came natural.
You know. So
did you take lessons? Or did you go to school for it?
No, never.
Oh, you just learned on your own, or
So I'm basically self-taught, and I just listened a lot. Like I was talking about being blind. Listened a lot.
What kind of music were you listening to back then? Like how old were you?
You were pretty limited, but like when we grew up as kids, there was lots of R&B, of funky stuff, lots of old Aretha, Temptations, Dramatics,
The Miracles,
all the 60s stuff. We all, every black family had a picture of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and a Beatles record.
Damn right.
It was just like, that was just like almost every house you went into. Like
I love the Beatles. Hey, I'm a fan. And I love the Beatles.
We had a Beatles record. We had like Lauren Green.
Okay.
The cat from Bonanza, right?
Oh,
my father, it was crazy. Like he did a spoken word record. And
you
my
know
father
that.
And my father, he did a song called Ringo. My father would get drunk and he'd listen to Ringo.
Yeah,
I heard
a
blast, it stung my wrist.
Yeah.
His gun went flying from my fist. Blah blah blah. Now I'm in the hands of Ringo.
Damn,
boom, 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 boom.
So you grew up with that, and then how did you get into punk rock and everything?
You know, let me go back a bit too, my uncle is a very famous blues player.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. His name's Sam Carr.
Oh.
And he played with the Jelly Roll Kings.
Does he have records? He has records out there?
Oh, yeah, he has a discography of records.
So say his name and say it to the camera, so people can look it up.
Sam Carr.
From
the Jelly Roll Kings.
C-A-R-R?
C-A-R-R.
C-A-R-R.
Drummer. His father was Robert Nighthawk, which was the guy, legend has it that he was the first guy to play slide guitar. Way before Muddy Waters, way before any of those cats, he did it first.
Slide guitar. Break down what a slide guitar is.
A slide guitar is like when you play with a bottleneck, when you're having a guitar, it's usually tuned to like an open G tuning, and you can... Rolling Stones use it all the time.
Dang.
They use that. You take up, they have proper slides nowadays.
Yeah.
And I think it was it's a version of like the lap steel guitar.
That's cool, man.
Where you play it flat like this.
You play it flat like this.
And you play across like that, and the action is really high. So you pretty much slide up to the notes and back down.
That's crazy.
The steel guitar, I mean, a slide guitar was just that, the version like this, you know, and it was tuned to open G. And you know, back in the day, they didn't have any money, man. So they would just play, they would just grab a beer bottle and
improvise. You know,
a can or anything.
Dang. You know? So music's in your family, man.
Yeah, it was kind of. And I didn't, you know.
He was doing records and everything. Yeah. And dang.
But I mean, you know, when you were a kid, you're like, I don't want to hear all that old blues, you know, and some rock and roll, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that's what was happening in St. Louis at the time. It's like we were in a segregated community and, you know, pretty much. And like there was only certain places where you really could go. Even then, when I grew up, even like, you know,
Was it mostly black and white?
But I did work at a Mexican restaurant.
Right. There's Mexicans? What about Asians? Koreans?
Hey, there were Asians, you know.
Maybe one. He worked in the kitchen somewhere.
You know what? You know what we used to call him, which was really racist.
No, don't hold back.
I'm the Chinaman. Where you go? We're like, oh, we got to go to the Chinaman and get some food. Blah 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 blah.
Oh, that
blah.
Even bad. Bad. I thought you were gonna say Ching.
No, we weren't. No,
I thought you were gonna say Ching or Chang or something. Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I thought it was bad, man, because I wanted to be a better person, because I saw so much struggle and so much bullshit from people, and them taking out their racial frustrations on other people.
Who's they?
Like black people and white people, and like black people sort of having reverse prejudice and just taking it out. I hate all white people, just like everybody, which is, you know, I can understand that too. I can understand that. I really can't understand it. But at the same time, it's like that is like.
Well, you
I
have to give them context.
People are people.
Yeah. What era are you talking? Like, give them some context.
We're talking the 60s, early 60s. Oh, like, okay, this was like before. 62 before even
because some of these people watching this were born in 1995 or like or 2000 or something. Yeah, yeah. Because the people who listen and watch the podcast are like millennials or even younger than millennials.
I feel
so
really
that's
bad
why
for
I said
you.
Context.
I feel really bad for you if this is the, you know the, this is
no,
all
no,
y'all
no,
got
but
to
no,
listen
no,
to.
You're going
to
educate them. You're going to educate them. You're going to educate them.
Okay. Hang in there.
So 60s, we're still in Missouri.
Yeah.
Keep going. Yeah, I want to lead up to the punk though too. As
yeah,
well.
And yeah, then yeah. You know, and then it just kind of took on a life of its own. I, you know, my uncle was there. I didn't really adhere to blues because, you know, I'm a young kid. Mm-hmm. I'm really super energetic, which is why I kind of started playing drums too, because I had a lot of energy and I just
outlet. It was an outlet.
Yeah, it was an outlet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah, there were just tons of bands and like people, that whole big thing about Queen now. And like, we would sit there.
Hey, I just saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
You just saw
dude.
Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, it was all right.
It was all right, right?
It was okay. It was okay. Yeah. The actor who played Freddie,
Malik Remick.
He did a good job.
He did a good job, man.
Yeah.
They could have got a little
bit more
depth.
Yeah, go back to Queen. Yeah, why?
You know,
in what way?
We used to sit there and dissect those records and just listen to it because it was so rock, yet epic, yet almost vaudevillian, and it was like, we knew it was something different. We knew it was like different, and we wanted different stuff. Like we listened to Queen.
Dude, I remember the first album that I remember even my mom getting me, Queen, The Game.
Oh, The Game. Oh, man.
Do you remember that?
We had
album?
Sheer Heart Attack way back, you know, with
okay,
all
that was,
the
okay,
earlier
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
earlier
yeah.
Stuff.
But this was in the 80s because I'm a little younger.
You're
but
young.
Yeah, this was in the 80s. Yeah, yeah,
oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Shut up. Y'all know.
Yeah,
man,
yeah,
from
yeah,
the 80s.
Yeah. I don't know. So that was like their fifth album or something. No, correct me.
They're probably like their 12th album.
Oh, that was their 12th album?
I don't know.
Damn. All right, I'm way out of
it. They got a bunch of stuff.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't know what the number is.
Just we'll edit that out, Craig, right? We can edit. Oh, edit that. I'm sorry, man. I should have said Queen.
No, keep going. It might be. Was that a good album?
The
Game. You know what am I thinking? Do 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 do. It was all right. They, you know, by then Bohemian Rhapsody had already happened.
Okay.
And like, I wasn't that big of a fan of the stuff after that.
Yeah.
Because they experimented. They let Freddie Mercury just go. He was like I say. He was doing like these. Like all this weird vaudevillian type.
He was a performer though, yeah?
Oh, he was a great performer. And, you know, for somebody new in the band to come in and also just kind of take over the band.
Yeah.
Not take
so
over,
was that true in the movie? Because Was that pretty accurate?
I believe so. I believe, you know, like, those other guys, they saw something. They saw something in him.
In him.
You know, and they were like, oh, we don't know where you're going, but we want to be along for the ride.
But in the movie, it made it seem like Freddie went to their gig and then, like, approached them after the gig and, hey.
Yeah.
He did. So that really happened?
Yeah. I think that's the way, you know, I mean, I'm going off the movie, too.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't there,
Okay. It was pretty good, yeah. I give it, like, a B.
I enjoyed it.
Man. So you grew up with like so Queen, was that an influence, would you say?
I would definitely say that Queen was
okay, then but influence. Let's talk about some other ones too.
King Crimson. You would listen to fusion stuff. My brother turned me on to Frank Zappa when I was young.
Believe it or not, highly experimental too. Wasn't he doing off the wall stuff?
Yeah, he had all this jazz, weird fusion psychedelic stuff. And the thing about him is like Frank Zappa, which I appreciated about a front man, he would get in there and do his thing and be himself. Like, he was quirky. He wasn't trying to sing like anybody else.
No.
But he could play a guitar just up and down and arrange stuff.
But he played other instruments as well, right?
Yeah. But he also had these great musicians that could just conquer anything. And they just fit the mold of what he wanted, and he was ever-changing, you know?
He was really weird, wasn't he?
He was weird, but he was...
In a good way.
Yeah, but there were bands like that who were weird. There were like, you know, the Good Rats and Captain Beefheart and his Magic Band, which was another band that's kind of a Frank Zappa-esque band.
How would you categorize that music?
You know, that would almost, you know... Captain Beefheart is almost like a punk rock thing, but it's I don't know. I would almost say that it's more like
this is like music history.
Music.
This guy
and
keep
disease
going.
Music,
yeah.
But you know, yeah, man. Him, Frank Zappa, and you know, there were some guitar players around, so they would like really be into Thin Lizzy, and I'd listen because you know we'd do things as a group, as a band, as a group, and we just like hang out and party down and like listen to UFO and Thin Lizzy and Deep Purple, lots and lots of Deep Purple. God, I remember when the first time I heard Made in Japan, I think I wore the grooves off that record. Yeah.
What year was this? Were you in the 70s?
That was maybe 70.
Okay, we're in the, okay, 71.
Yeah. I mean, that.
Me and Craig weren't even born yet.
We were born a few years later.
Yeah. But keep going, man. These are all 60s bands to the early 70s.
Yeah. These are more 70s bands.
Because
like the 60s were, you know, I did really listen to a lot of like, I mean, I was a kid, but it was all R&B and
name some R&B band. Yeah, name some R&B groups you're listening to.
No, like I said, like Temptations.
Oh, Temptations. So that was the OG R&B stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because R&B later became like what's that? New Edition and Troop and Mint Condition.
So that
was like before even before that.
I mean, Aretha Franklin, like, you know, so Queen of Soul, that was like the real, like, yeah, she was like
okay,
the real
that's,
R&B.
That's a real
like R&B. Even James Brown would get thrown in that category too.
R&B?
Yeah. R&B, yeah. Some of his stuff, yeah, earlier on. Yeah.
Love, yeah.
It was just like rhythm and blues.
Yeah, rhythm and blues. Yeah,
man.
So let's get to, when did you come across punk or like, was it even like?
Well, after, you know, after the tumultuous 70s.
Yeah.
I'm a kid. I just graduated high school. I was doing nothing. And a friend of mine called me from San Francisco and said, hey, man, there's kind of a scene out here, bro. You should come check it out. I was like, what? And I jumped on the Greyhound bus and went to San Francisco and left a note on the fridge for my mom.
That's how
love, mom. See you later.
That's like a movie, man.
It is a movie. You got to believe I'm going to write it, too.
So you just.
And I had like a lunch bag with like a, you know, a paper bag with, I think, a sandwich and an orange. And I'm like, I was just
about,
a blissful kid.
What about?
I had $8.
How the hell? You had $8 in your name.
No, I borrowed $30 or something. $30 or $40 to pay for the Greyhound bus, but I couldn't pay for my luggage. So I had to talk the guy and they let me in.
How old were you, man? Yeah.
17
years old.
Dude, I'm like, I got go, baby.
You really have my attention. Keep going on this story.
So, you know, yeah, man. I starved, I was like, wow, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bologna sandwich was long gone, which I don't eat bologna today. I let your kids know I'm a vegan. Vegans rule. You got to get your vegan on.
Okay.
Organic vegan on. You, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I like what you're doing.
Get away from the burger.
You're the first person to ever...
Get away from the burger. Step away from the meat.
Acknowledge the mic like that.
Get off the meat. Get off the fish.
Yeah.
Get onto the plant-based stuff, man. Okay. It's 2019. What the problem is. Okay.
All right, so, Craig. Yeah, you hear that? No more pizza.
So, yeah. And, you know, man, yeah, and I saw for a couple of days, a bunch of 4 or 5 days, and wound up in San Francisco. And, like, I just... St. Louis was really cold, really freezing cold, and, like... Getting to San Francisco, it felt warm. You know what I mean?
It's a cooler climate than us in here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, California, but it was warm. It was like, wow, man. And it was just the architecture. I just never seen anything like it. And like, people were just so open and so much more friendly and just like, hi. Like, you know, that.
Are we in 79. We're in 79 now.
79. Now.
Okay.
We're just moving along because, you know.
Yeah, time.
You know, the film's probably going to come out and then you'll know everything.
No, this is good that you're saying it now, though. I'll get them excited.
Going to need a lot of money to make
Where were you staying, though? Where were you staying? Like, in the Tenderloin? Like where?
Right then, I get to San Francisco, meet my friend, my boy Fred Dickinson, who got me out there. I got big props to him. He died, man.
Oh, rest in peace.
A couple years ago, heart attack. Yeah, it was a drag.
He was a musician as well.
Yeah, and I played with him in St. Louis as well. Yeah. And so I get there, I meet his brother, and his brother's like this flaming guy, and I've never really seen one. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, Janie. He had these blue parachute pants on, a la MC Hammer, and like this, some crazy colored daishiki and some fur and a
he was rocking a daishiki.
He was killing it though.
Damn, he was rocking a daishiki.
And he had a little pet Pomeranian named Pal.
He was a white guy?
No, he's a big tall brother with a beard. Tall, skinny brother.
He was rocking daishiki, yeah.
And he used to sing like woo.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
And I would start singing some Little Richard. He'd jump right in, he'd start singing some Little Richard, and Pearl would come in.
So he was out there.
So meanwhile, back at the ranch, I was supposed to go there and play with a sort of a Janis Joplin impersonator band. Like this guy, Pearl was his name. He lived with Janis Joplin in the 60s. You know, like they grew up together. You know, he hung out with her and he had all her moves and he had all the jewelry and, you know, he was a flaming gay guy and that was great. I was just like, wow, look at, you know, and him and AJ got into so many catfights that the band never really got out of the living room. So I was like, oh, wow, this is crazy. I got to do something. But, you know.
Like music-wise, band-wise?
Music-wise, band-wise. We didn't even get to play. We didn't even play together at all. I mean, me and Fred.
Yeah.
Back then, there were days where there were places where you can go and you could go and.
Like open mics or something?
Open mics, sort of. Yeah. It was like
they had that back then?
Yeah.
Like coffee shops? It was like,
places for the omnibus and a lot of old deadheads would hang out and left overtures from bands and people would come in and just kind of, you know, jam and so we do that a lot, man, and hang out. And this was all right in the Haight-Ashbury, right? We lived in the Haight-Ashbury, so I lived up on Frederick and Stanion, right across from Kezar Pavilion, and Golden Gate Park and all that. And so, man, you know, I'm hanging out and things aren't going cool, and I actually moved back to San Francisco, St. Louis, and then I saved up a bunch of money and came back again. I bought a van, and I ended up living in a van south of Market with these guys. It was just me, and I think I had a job at a pizza shop, and I didn't know San Francisco, and I was just becoming a bicycle messenger, and I meet these guys, and they're like, hey, man, we see you got, like, some drums in your van, and they were like, one guy, he totally looked like... Joe Strummer. He looked like Joe Strummer. He was almost a split image. He had the hair and he was just, you know.
He had the spiky hair too.
It wasn't really spiky, but it was like kind of almost rockabilly.
Yeah.
But he like had on these pleated pants and he's one suspender coming across and this whole diagonal look going on. And I was like, that's odd.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, man, well, you know, our drummer just left and we need like a, you know, drummer. I was like, okay, cool. What kind of stuff?
Was it Jello?
What kind of stuff? No, it wasn't. Oh. He was like, what kind of stuff do you do? And I'm like, he was like, it's punk rock. I was like, oh, wow. I don't know, man. I was like, no. Because I was just thinking, you know, all the stuff I heard about punk rock was safety pins and puke and vomit and stale beer and people, you know, all the bad things about punk rock. And they were like, well, you can come on in and hang out. And they had a warehouse. Like a warehouse. They lived in a warehouse.
And they did gigs there.
No. We didn't even jam there. Oh. I mean, you could hang out late and make some noise. But it was more like, it was just their artist warehouse. Like, that's I've never cool. seen one of those.
Yeah, like a loft.
It was like a loft. And the kitchen was up here. And there's rooms over here. And it was like, wow. And I was like, wow, I got a bathtub. I can maybe take a bath and like not sleep in the van.
Yep.
So I started hanging out with them. And I was like, they were like, punk rock, man. I was like, no, I don't, you know. I'm kind of one of the Judas Priests.
Iron Maiden, Judas Priest.
Well, okay. They were like, okay. Do you, and there was a great band who I was really into that lived across the bay. They were called Yesterday and Today at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember them from my childhood.
Who are these guys called? The guys you?
They're called the SSI.
SSI. Didn't Supplemental that later Security become like Income. A label?
No, that was SST.
SST was the label.
Now, I started jamming. You know, they took me in and they started kind of schooling me. And they were like, "Do you like the Ramones?" I was like, "No." "Do you like television?" "No." "Do you like Iggy Pop?" And I heard Iggy Pop and I was kind of like, I was just like, no, I don't know. And then they were like, you like Sex Pistols? I was like, no. Yeah. They're like, well, have you heard the Ramones? Have you heard Sex Pistols? I was like, no. They're like,
So you weren't even into it?
No. Oh. And they just start playing music and I was like, I love this. I love it. I was just like, wow. Yeah. And I was in it.
Why did you think you gravitated? Is it the energy?
The energy, the sound, and it wasn't on rock and roll, which I really loved, and from my R&B humble blues rock background, it was like, oh wow, and I was already had a lot of energy, and so I knew that this was kind of like, okay, we can push this up to the next level. So yeah, they just saw Trial by Fire. They started playing a bunch of stuff for me, man. And I was just like, wow, this is cool. And it really did open up my world. Alcohol. And that's the thing about, like, you know, I was hesitant at first, but I knew that you got to have an open mind in this thing. You got to have, you got to be open to stuff. And then I just got turned onto a lot of different bands. And us in San Francisco was more about, like, a lot of the local bands, like the Fleshapoids. There was an all-girl band called The Contractions. I love that name.
That's a cool name.
There was The Offs. I was in another band called Speed Boys and Slug Lords and...
You sound like motorcycle gangs.
Basically, we had a patch for a top and bottom rocker on the
like the Warriors jacket
that said Road Morons. Road Morons. Because we were really into Road Warrior, the movie that just came out. And
right, like, there, Mad Max, baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the jam.
Yeah.
That's the new one, but not the old school one.
So you guys had uniforms?
No. We were just dicking around. Yeah. Because we were artists, man. We just make stuff.
No, were you recording on 4-tracks or like reel to reels?
We would do a lot. There was one guy who had a 16-track recorder, and Tom Mallon, he recorded a lot of the punk bands.
The tape.
And Dead Kennedys even went over there and re-recorded the single with him, Child and Islam War. So we did that, and then you know, I just got turned on to all these bands, and the beautiful thing, and to go back to what I was talking about earlier, being blind, we would play at the Deaf Club.
Back then.
This was a club for the deaf. Was deaf people can hang out, and they do tons of sign language, and they hang out. And there weren't that many places to play for punk rock bands. There was the Mubuhay Gardens, Deaf Club. Later on, there was Tool and Die and blah, 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 and a bunch of other places. But in the earlier days, that was kind of the one place. And it was a long set of steps. You had to drag all your equipment up there, and it was just crazy. But the deaf people got off so much on the vibration of the music that should see them just like, I never felt anything like this.
So they went on because they can hear it.
They can hear it, but they can feel you. And they can feel the energy. And, before it was before Slam Dance, and people were pogoing around, just jumping up and down.
What's pogo? What is that?
Pogo is like you just kind of jump up and down. You know when you see people jump,
pogo,
jump.
Pogo.
But it was more goofy, new wavy.
Yeah.
You know, people were just bouncing up and just jumping up and down to the music. You know,
that's crazy,
so
dude. Yeah,
different, man.
So how long were you jamming with these guys? Like,
I played with them for a bunch of years, and like I said, I played with the Speed Boys and Slug Lords later, and a ton of other bands in San Francisco. But, we were playing at the Mabuhay SSI one night, and East Bay Ray was like, "Hey man, we need a drummer. I was wondering if you would come down and audition."
Audition where? Like, L.A.?
No. We were San Francisco.
Okay,
And I said, "Oh wow!" And then, you know, I was just like, and I think I had a girlfriend at the time, Teresa, and I was like, "Hey, I don't know. I'm black. I'm probably not gonna get this. I don't think." That's gonna be a good. I don't know, man. I don't know. She was like, "Yeah, you better go. They're fucking famous." I was like, "Okay."
Damn, this was your shot.
And remember, meanwhile, I was working at a place, a gay bondage hotel, building these like gay bondage beds and all these straps and all these torture chambers, and I like cut my finger on something. I was like, "Fuck this, man!" And Dead Kennedys came on the call because we always listen to KUSF, college radio station, and they'd always play Dead Kennedys off and all the bands that were around, you know, a lot of local bands, was Tetris too, bands from New York and DNA and all types of stuff, man. So
you got an audition.
So yeah, I got an audition and I just like, all right, we're gonna go. And
what was that like? Were you nervous? Like, tell me about that. Like,
I don't know if I was really nervous, but I got the record and I kept listening to it and I was like, no, I want to play this. I'm gonna change it like this, and then I get to the audition. Jello Biafra isn't there. I was like, oh, okay. So I jammed with Klaus and Ray, East Bay Ray and Klaus Fluoride, the bass player and guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, "Well, as far as we're concerned, you got it, but you know, Mr. Biafra,
And
he was like,
"Where was he? Why wasn't he there?"
I don't know.
Okay, but keep going.
So the next audition, I came down, he was there, and we played the song Insight, and they had just had all the other drummers come and play, and they were like, "We play Insight," and I just killed it, murdered it, and they were like, "That's our guy our guy."
How many other people were you competing for this job?
You know, I really don't know. I know that there was a guy, Liam, and I know there was Al from the Seizures, Liam from some other band. He ended up playing in a bunch of other bands, and I just think that there was a lot. Everybody knew that kind of, because I can't, you know, a couple of singles were already out, and they had just released a full length record, so.
You were aware of this.
I was aware of that. You know, and San Francisco's a small town. The punk scene is pretty, you know, if you're in the scene, you kind of know what's happening. You know?
Damn, that's crazy.
So it was really wild, man. Yeah. And
what was it like when you first met Jello? Like, what was that like?
I had met him before. We'd been talking, you know, we I thought he was this larger than life, which he is, this larger than life character. He did talk a lot, and I didn't know that much about politics, or knew more than I thought I knew.
But he would
really like just rant on. I'm like, oh, I gotta find out what.
Yeah. Was this during the Reagan, Ronald Reagan?
This was the end of Jimmy Carter, beginning of Ronald Reagan, era.
And we just
poked and prodded as many holes in that establishment as we could.
So what was it like first recording with them, like the albums and gigging with them and doing your first shows with the Dead Kennedys?
The first recording was Too Drunk to Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I can say that on your podcast.
No, it's fine. Because it's too late. No, it's just fine. It's just going on YouTube. So.
Can't take it back.
Yeah, it's okay.
You can't take it back to the store and get your money back.
No, it's fine. That's it. You're fine. Yeah.
Millennials.
Yeah.
Too Drunk to Fuck was the flip side was The Prey. So we've just been rehearsing and we just went in and we recorded over at High Street Studios in the Tenderloin. Dang. Which is like,
I mentioned, I said that.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay. The TL.
Isn't that a rough place?
It's rough.
Because I've heard stories. I've heard some stories about the Tenderloin. Still to this day.
It's still kind of the Tenderloin, which
is like drug infested, super dangerous, crackheads,
brutal. There was not. I think they have a police station there now, which is a joke. But like,
it was probably rougher back then too.
It was way. It was just nothing. It was just like a normal, you know, like there's some trannies, there's some dude. It was just like you just maneuvered through all of it. It was like another day. Mm-hmm. You know, it just got to be commonplace.
San
Francisco was one of those places, man, where you would see homeless people all the time, you know, and there were people who would, but not like it is today, but there were a few homeless people, and usually they just had mental problems, but it's crazy. It's a lot worse than it was today.
We're like drugs and alcohol involved like back then, because I know like we're both sober now, but like back then there was that like even the other bandmates were
you know, that was kind of the thing. We weren't really into drugs even, but, you know, we'd do drugs every now and then. I had my own private life, I would definitely drink. I'd definitely just, coke and smoke weed and do whatever I wanted to do, like, aside from the band. But, you know, there was a certain responsibility that we had, and, you know, that we all had, that we had to take care of. Making these records, because, you know, I mean, we never thought anything was going to be legendary or whatever, but we wanted to do the best we can. Whether you call it punk rock or not, you know.
Yeah. When did you start realizing getting traction and traveling the world and doing tours and?
Well, that came right after we did the first gig.
Where was that? I do
remember. Was in Sacramento. Sacramento.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sacramento, Palo Alto, Sacramento. At some huge theater, and I just remember like, wow, there's a lot of people here. Because
how many people were there?
There was like maybe 1,200 people. Like, you know, for back in the day, it was like, that's a lot of people, and like it was packed. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And you know, the Mabuhay would pay for 300 people. That that was just a little bit out of town, but you know, DKs were that kind of a band that drew that many people back in the, you know, and tickets were cheap and wages were cheap and, you know, but people showed up because it was something new. It was new.
Yeah.
A new music, man, a new force to be reckoned with. And like,
but it wasn't played on like certain, like commercially, right? Like it wasn't on MTV or nothing. Cause MTV was popping.
MTV.
Cause you had that song, MTV Get Off the Air as well. Yeah. But cause I noticed when you're on that, there's a video on it and you're like, you're doing vocals, you're like drumming. Uh-huh. But then you're also doing vocals as well.
Yeah, I did backing vocals as well, yeah.
So when did you start doing that?
Sing, you know.
When did they start implementing that, like, as far as, like...
backing vocals?
With the backing vocals,
I think I kind of initiated that. I was like, why is Klaus singing vocals and backing vocals and Ray doesn't sing and I do? I just kind of grabbed the mic and, like... Oh, let me sing on blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah. Oh,
yeah,
da, da, da.
Yeah.
Oh, I know how this. Let me. Oh, I can do that part.
It added to it, dude. It added to it.
And still today. It adds to the overall sound. You know, when everybody's singing in a band, it does.
Yeah.
It just kind of uplifts the thing.
So what are some standout moments like with the DKs, like as far as like shows or touring or like certain albums that you guys recorded? Like what stands out to you? Do you guys big in Europe at all? Or?
Huge in Europe.
Yeah.
Like I was going to say.
What was that like when you first went to Europe then? We
recorded Plastic Surgery. We recorded in God We Trust first.
Yeah.
The tape disintegrated, so we had to record it again at a different studio. It was a bad batch of Ampex tape. We spent a lot of time recording it, and it just
melted
in our head. Yeah, it disintegrated. So we recorded
these kids won't
that.
Understand that because everything's digital now, MP3s now. And stuff.
And the thing is with stuff being so digital, it squashes a lot of the sound and you're not getting...
It compresses it.
Compresses it.
Yeah.
And you're not really, you know, the full... That's why we like vinyl, we like blah, 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 we like what we like. And you know, and I listen to digital stuff as well.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you a broader sound.
These kids are going to be so confused. They're like, what are they talking about?
You can get
about?
A better sound from
disintegrated?
From stuff that's not as compressed.
Yeah, because, you know, back then, well, it was reel-to-reels and then tape, cassette tape.
Yeah.
And then CDs were probably like futuristic to you.
CDs didn't come out.
Disbanded before the CDs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I remember when I got my first CD, because we were still selling records constantly. The band's broken up. We're still selling 80,000, 100,000 records a year.
Records. Worldwide.
Records.
Who distributed? Yeah, worldwide. Hold up. Who distributed the records?
Well, Alternative Tentacles had the license for the records. I think Rough Trade did distribution.
Oh, okay.
Rough Trade did distribution, I think. On that one. And and then when CDs came out, it was like, whoa, bam. Then, you know, you had the. People were buying less vinyl, but they were buying a lot of CDs.
Yeah,
then it was just kind of boo. And then Napster came and just ripped the asshole and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
how long were the original Dead Kennedys together? Like, how long were you guys together as a band?
I was in the band, I want to say 10 years. It was from 79 to 86, I believe.
What happened?
I joined about 1980.
Yeah, yeah.
81 or so, you know, and it just
You
know, and I was in the band, you know.
Yeah. Did something happen with Jello? Like, what happened? Was he tripping out on something?
Oh, man, there was
like licensing or something like that, like with the music, like commercials. That's what I heard.
I don't buy any of that. Like
that's what's like the people online.
That's what people online are saying.
So it wasn't over like a Levi's commercial using a Dead Kennedy song on a Levi's commercial.
It wasn't anything.
So he was just being weird about like.
It was, you know, there was some disagreements in the band and some in-band fighting. And I'm like, I got my own stuff to deal with, you know. I wasn't like in the middle of it. Like so many people are into the drama. I'm like, you can miss me with all that, you know.
And I think
it was something between the guitar player and Jello, you know.
Right.
And it could still well be, but, you know.
They haven't even...
No, we try to get him. And we want to
Is he still around, by the way?
He's still around, yeah. Does he live around? Incidentally, we're still touring, by the way.
You are?
Yeah. We're still touring.
Oh. But as the Dead Kennedys?
As Dead Kennedys,
yeah.
We have a different singer. We've had a
few singers.
We're still touring. We're going to Mexico City, May 3rd.
Start doing that now, yeah. So May 3rd?
May 3rd, Domination. I think it's actually on the 4th or 5th. But Domination Festival... in Mexico City with like Kiss, Alice Cooper, Lamb of God, and a holocaust of other bands. It's like a 3-day festival. Craziness.
I'm so
then
happy
after that,
for
we
you,
come
man.
Back.
That's great.
Then we go to South America and do...
you go to South America?
Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Peru, I think Bolivia, Colombia, and somewhere else. Damn, so it's like, it's still... Great, it's like... The music sort of speaks for itself.
People want to,
you know, and like that brand and all that stuff. Like, people want to hear that band, and they want to hear that sound. They want to hear the music.
That's
man.
The power of music. It transcends time periods. You know what I mean?
And even band members. I was watching some documentary on that the other night.
Wow,
there's a lot of truth to some of that stuff that they're saying.
Journey, like, what was the group? Was it Journey?
It was Journey. We got the guy off.
The Philippines?
The Filipino guy.
Killing
it.
Dude, that Filipino dude.
That
he's
dude,
a performer,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah.
He's and probably he's my size. What are you laughing at, Greg?
And he's a singer.
You don't think Filipino dudes could do it?
No.
You don't think Pinoys could do it or what?
Oh, my boy from Slugloads, we had a Filipino bass player.
Don't sleep on the Filipinos, dude.
It was like... There was the mixing pot, dude. We have Filipinos and like
Pinoys
Filipinos.
Could sing, dude. They could rap, they could sing, they could dance.
He wanted to be Sting at the time,
yeah.
But you know, we were just whatever.
So, man, I want to because people like I have a Patreon connected to the show, and people, one of the patrons asked about what was it like getting involved with the Chili Peppers as well. This is going good, by the way. I love it.
You don't have to do much work.
I'm just chilling. I love that's why I love you, dude.
Thank you so much.
I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing.
Yeah, I'll see you. you know, with Chili Peppers was you know, being in Dead Kennedys, being Flea and Anthony and shit, Hillel and even Cliff, man, we were just like friends. When they come into town, they'd stay at my place. We'd hang out, we'd party, and we were just friends. And you know, and after the band broke up, they came back to town again, and Flea was like, "Dude, you should move to L.A." I was like, "What?"
Wait, Flea told you that?
Yeah, I was like, "For what, man? I don't sold out rock stars writing this song by the pool." I was super almost jaded and judgmental, and I knew that was a dangerous place to be. And I was like, "Oh wow." He's like, "There's a lot of work down there." And I was like, "Okay, whatever." Then, you know, then one day it was just like really cold in San Francisco, like it always is. And my boy Mark, who was one of my roommates, he was like, "Dude, we should move down there, man. We should move down to where the beach, man." So, you know, we packed up. He had a school bus. He was living in a school bus.
You guys drove down in a school bus?
School bus, towing my Karmann gear. I had an old beat up 58 Karmann gear. Dang. Towing that down.
I was driving
a van too, and it was like a caravan.
We stopped at
Big Sur, smoked some crack, and then I tried to fuck with these big, you know, those big sea elephant walruses.
Yeah.
Them big, huge. I'm like, oh, they're just like fucking little docile creatures. But I went to go fuck with one, and he was like,
"Oh my god! Oh my!"
I was like, "Oh shit!" Like, you know, when you're crack and shit, it's like, "Oh shit, this thing gonna eat me, man." Yeah, hightailed it back, and I just like had to go back again. I tried to sneak up on him and go back again.
Why are you messing with this animal, man?
It's a fucking badass child, and he just rolled up again. I was like, "Oh shit, let's go, dude." They were gnarly, dude. Like,
hey, how much was crack back then?
It's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. Yeah.
Like was crack easy to get back then?
Oh, dude, crack. It was the 80s. It was a fucking epidemic. Are you kidding me?
You could just go, everyone's, like, if this was in L.A., if this was the 80s, I could go to Santa Monica.
You go next door, dude. Like, should there be some crack dealer?
How much for a rock? Like,
dude,
five,
here, when I moved to here, there were, like, you know, people, you can buy $10 rock, $5 rock, you know, $20. Bent day was, like, that'll hold you for a while.
That's
but, you
crazy.
Know, then it was
That's
just,
crazy.
It was just crazy, man. Yeah. It was crazy.
All right, so you come down. Where did you stay in L.A. when you
stayed in West Hollywood?
Okay,
a friend of mine.
They had a spot for you?
No, I don't really remember how that transpired. I know we got here, and I think I went to a club and I met this dude. Christian was like, "Oh my god, you're DH player." I was like, "Dude, what's up?" Blah, 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 blah. And they had this whole sort of house with a guest house and a empty lot.
Sick.
So we just pulled in there.
Yeah.
And hooked up our water and electricity and everything to the bus, and we just kind of stayed there and
That's
lived
cool.
there.
Yeah.
And it was like the Wheaties house, and like all these actors would come over, and Chili Peppers would come over for barbecues, and John Seidel, and like all the scenesters would kind of hang there, and then we'd just go out and go dominate a club because we knew everybody, and they knew everybody in the club, and they're like, "Oh, it's DH, boy, he's our boy." Woo, woo, woo. So it was like carte blanche. I was like, "Wow!"
So you had red carpet access.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. And then, like, you know, then things got a little dark because there was no music happening. I wasn't really. I mean, I was playing in some bands, but they weren't like going anywhere. And then I joined the Chili Peppers, and that's how that happened. Jack Irons had some mental problems, and. They asked me if I'd come down. And I was like, "Oh, man, I'll think about it."
Yeah.
I totally did. I was like, "I'll think about it." And that's not me. Usually I'm just the first one to say, "Yeah."
Yeah.
I was like, And Philippe was like, "I was hoping you could come over at 3:00 today." I was like, "All right."
Was this another audition?
No, it wasn't an audition. It was like,
They want you in.
They want you. You're in.
You didn't have to do it. You just showed up.
Just show up and play. Yeah. Jump and play. And it was like golden.
So what was that like? Like how long? Like what were those gigs like? Like as far as doing shows with those guys?
The shows were bigger and they were way bigger. College campuses, you know, like girls. Like I'd never seen girls like that backstage.
Tell me about lifting up their titties for a t-shirt.
Wait.
What'd you say?
Oh yeah. There was a thing where we would just like have the girls come back and like, show me your titties, we'll give you a t-shirt. And like, I didn't know. I was just like, titties, mama.
Yeah, I want to, you know what? The next,
Anthony was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "What?" Like I was a bad little child and I got my.
Oh, like, you can't do that?
He was like, you can't. I was like, "What? Like, you can look at the titties, but you can't touch the titties? They don't even make sense to me." I'm frothing here.
Because lawsuits.
Yeah, and they got a bunch later. But I just didn't know. I didn't think about, you might be 17. I didn't think about that.
You gotta be careful, dude. You gotta be careful.
Oh, trust me, I know now.
Yeah, you know now. God, I didn't even think about it. Now this is intriguing. I didn't even think, because they must have had crazy groupies.
Yeah, and these are, a lot of them were like grown-ass college girls, but then a lot of them are still pretty young.
So, after, you're done with the show, you're sweating, you go to the trailer. Are they outside, knocking on the trailer?
No, but we would still be like, we're still kind of professional. We were professional in a sense. We'd be packing up our stuff. And just a few would be backstage. And I don't know how they got there. They're friends of friends. But there was always some scenesters. And then there were people who would show up at your hotel room like, where's Anthony? Anthony would just run.
They'd come knocking at the hotel room?
They would just be out there in the parking lot. Just like that. And that's how it is in Brazil when we go there now. Like there's kids and girls hanging out.
So how do you deal with that?
I'm just room service, chill. Yeah. If I go out, go out to smoke a cigarette or something and go hang out and they just swarm you. Dude, we were in Chile with Dead Kennedys and we played with like Hell Yeah, Meshuggah, Rammstein, a bunch of other bands. And literally kids were there every time you went out, every time you went out, I would just want,
What, to get ice or something? Yeah.
I got to go out. They're there and they all got phones and they all want pictures. And it's just it's just an obstacle course, man. And it's like, you're grateful for that, but you got some human, normal.
It's a job too. Yeah.
You got to maintain your integrity and, not.
Like, yeah. Oh, you know.
Not, I don't. Right. Give in to anger as quickly.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little bit, because.
But so start you've learned to deal with the temptation as well. I mean, because I'm sure there's.
Yeah. And sometimes I might just give in to it. Babe. Because there's a lot of big butted bitches in Brazil.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So what's that like?
Like
they're.
It's so juicy.
Like just the.
Oh, Lord. I think.
Like. Yeah. Just. Yeah. I mean, that must be heaven.
No, girl.
Come on.
Dude.
That must be heaven, dude.
It is heaven. It's pretty heavy.
Because you're a man also.
Brazil is the ass capital of the world. Oh, and for the first time in my life, I wanted to be a capitalist.
Yeah. So they
I just little kids had it. Little children had it. Easy there. It was like, boom. I know.
It's just in the food. It's genetics. It's genetics. Yeah. It's
just genetically. And a lot of them are just mixed with African descent.
Yeah,
so,
You my brother. Man.
I will eat you.
Yeah.
I will eat you, millennial.
I had to ask, man, because the people who listen to this, they know that, I'm.
No, girl.
I'm a pervert.
They're not pervert. Big titty girls. If they got big titties, they're usually kind of fake. Some do, but it's all about the ass and the calves.
But the butt can make up for it.
The
bubble butt.
Uh huh.
Because when I watch, I watch
when you
Pornhub.
You get your face up in there.
I type it in. I type in butt POV bubble butt.
Uh huh.
That's it. POV bubble butt. I'm just on that.
POV.
POV. POV. That's a point of view.
One of you.
Like, it seems like you're the dude there and bubble butt.
And the bubble butt.
Yeah.
But I do like the, when they're sitting up front like that.
Oh, yeah.
And you see the abs. You know. Because I work out every day, so I dig hard body.
Hey, you're a man, and we're all men here. We watch some things.
And the sheep
we still
are
have.
Nervous.
Yeah, yeah. So let's, I didn't even know this, but let's talk about the vegan. Like, when did you become, I'm open to it. Let's talk about the vegan. Like, when did, were you, you ate meat previously, right?
Probably, yeah, when I was 17.
And
when I came to San Francisco.
Yeah, dude.
All that changed. Like, I would work for these hippies. They had a health food store and they had a bunch of houses. So we worked for them painting houses and doing all kinds of, painting houses, and they let us live in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another thing too. In San Francisco, we were living in like this mansion, and I mean, it was a bit dilapidated and beat up and freezing cold, but it was like a mansion, dude, like for free.
That's crazy.
For free.
Yeah, they owned it,
and they would like just give you weed, and you can stay here, and you want some food, and get it from the health food store. We got coffee, blah, 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 blah. But meanwhile, these guys we knew, they had been they had sold a bunch of weed, and FBI, we didn't know the FBI was
The FBI?
Like, FBI was after them.
For what?
For selling weed.
For weed?
For weed. Way back, this was way back in the day. Okay, they were selling.
Because a lot of the listeners and viewers won't understand that at all. Because dispensaries are around nowadays. This
was before it was legalized.
Right. So the FBI, they were tripping on weed back then.
Yeah. Jeez. They were tripping on
this. Okay. But keep going with the diet.
And so I meet this guy, and the dude's like, hey, man, why are you eating a burger? Like, I had some McDonald's burger or something. I was like, I don't really know. It's because of just of what I've been taught, like bread and meat and, you know, potatoes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that's how our family, you know,
yeah.
The old slave traders taught, my mom and them to eat shit
Yeah.
And he was like, bro, there's a better way. Meat is murder. Like, let me show you this. And then he took me in this health store and started showing me all this stuff that was super alien to me.
Like, what was he showing you?
Like spirulina and tofu. I'd never even heard of tofu. Wheatgrass, wheat germ, just all the earlier stages of like superfoods.
Dang.
You know?
Yeah.
And like how you get your protein from this and blah, 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 blah. And beans and rice make a perfect amino acid. And like,
yeah.
And I would just live there. And there was another guy, Monty, Asian guy, long. Like, he was like the classic Chinese.
Fu Manchu.
Yeah. But he was gay, but it was like he was so sweet, and he just seemed to flow through the thing. And then one day he asked me to take care of his plants because he had gone out of town, and I think I killed one. I didn't mean, I swear to God, Monty, if you're out there, I'm sorry, man.
That's right. So Monty, please forgive DH for killing your plant.
I overslept.
he'll forgive you, dude.
But no, yeah, man, it was... You know, and they just turned me on to, like, being a vegetarian. And that's where it started.
So what are the major differences between being a vegan and a vegetarian?
Oh, the animal products. Because if you're a vegetarian, you can still eat cheese. Butter.
Yeah.
Animal byproducts. Yeah. Eggs.
But you're a vegan.
I'm vegan. So
you don't eat any of that.
I don't eat any of that. So now, I mean, like, 20 years ago, I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to cut that out.
So did you go cold turkey, like, back then?
Yeah, because I was just like, I don't think I need this. I don't know. And I didn't know there was a thing called vegan.
This is before there was a term.
I didn't know it was called that, you know. And I mean, the closest thing I could think of was maybe microbiotic. And I think even microbiotic people eat fish, but I was not eating fish, you know. I just like, start cutting it out. And voila.
You're healthier than ever. Like, yeah. So give some of the viewers and listeners like what are some recommendations if they decide to do something like that, like where could they what's a good starting point?
A good starting point, man, is to like have a place where you can create your own meals and like start with like the beans and rice. I like salads and greens and I get a lot of energy and a lot of nutrients from salads and greens and
spinach.
And so,
man.
I would always like make everything on a bed of lettuce, and make my own dressing, which
you make your own?
Yeah, make my own dressing, which consists of little tahini, a little olive oil, garlic, some maybe a little maple syrup, put some walnuts in it, and squeeze lemon,
mm-hmm.
and little apple cider vinegar, and there's something else. That's cool, man. But
yeah.
So I just started, clearing all that stuff, and I would just start cooking my own meals, you know.
What about how do you get your protein?
Oh, you get
the tofu
tofu, peanuts, beans, and
nuts.
I like tempeh. Yeah.
What's tempeh? What is that?
Tempeh is a derivative of tofu. I think it's more of you get more of the bean, like an edamame bean.
Yeah.
It is soybeans, but it's, you can see the little bean, the little beans in it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you can absorb the protein.
When's the last time you ate meat officially?
I don't know.
Has it been like 20 years?
It's been a lot longer than that. It's like, I don't know. It's been like 30, 40 years.
Oh my 30, god, 40, you know, that's something like crazy.
That. Something like that. Something.
Are there restaurants where they like cater to this type of thing? Like where, like
vegan restaurants?
Yeah, like vegan restaurants.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And that's a great thing too. Like recently, a lot of them sprouted up, and you think that that's great here, but you know, I travel and tour a lot. So
then how do you find?
I got a vegan app now where I can, you know.
Oh, there's an app.
That yeah, what's it called? A healthy the. The Happy Cow, I think it's called the Happy Cow app. And you can, you know, wherever you're at, like, boom, 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 I want vegan food, you know, da, 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 da. It tells you where it is, where you can go. Mm-hmm. And if they have vegan options or vegetarian options, blah, 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 whether you're in Chile, whether you're in Spain, whether you're in Indonesia.
Yeah.
You know.
Which, dude, man, you're doing good, man. Ooh, you have a good diet. And let's talk about, I mean.
We got about five-ish.
Yeah.
5 minutes? Okay, cool. So this is the time where, man, I want you to plug. Are you're on Instagram?
Yep.
Or let's tell the viewer, like, how do they find your Instagram?
DH Peligro on Instagram. DH Peligro on Instagram. DH Peligro on Facebook.
Spell it out. D H
D H
space
P E no spaces.
Oh yeah. D H
on Instagram is just D H P E L I G R O. Bam, Instagram.
Okay.
Facebook. DHPELIGRO. Twitter, it's like DH, and there's some X's and a big O, and then there's Peligro.
Yeah.
I don't know how it looks like a porno thing, but it's you look there, you'll see my beautiful face.
And what about join me? What? How can they?
Journey.
How can they find your shows and your future tours?
For what, Dead Kennedys?
Yeah, or for whatever gig you got
Dead
going.
DeadKennedys.com has a, it's Dead Kennedys' website. You can find like the shows and the tours and get merchandise and find out what's happening. Instagram, you can just link up with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've got big booty, you know I like that. The rest of the stuff is just, you know, I just put my life stuff on there.
You do drumming lessons still?
I do, but okay, I haven't been doing it.
If a kid looks you up and they're like, I want to learn how to drum like him, how do they, just DM you on Instagram?
You could, yeah, you can DM me. And bring all your parents' money, all your money, and we'll get you some lessons.
Yeah, definitely do that.
But look also, I just want to tell you that, you know, I'm an actor and I've just worked on a film called... Hijab, H-I-J-A-B.
When's that dropping?
That should be out on, what do you call it, YouTube now. I did a short called Van Joe that should be coming out this year. Mm-hmm. We did a piece in a film called Scumbag, which is kind of a punk rock toner tale. That's been out over the last year, 2 years. And I did... something else. Something I did. What else is it? I'm forgetting what I've done. Anyway, just a bunch of stuff out, and I'm always looking for acting gigs. So you guys got the money.
Holler at DH. You know. Give this man more work. Support everything this man does. Go to every show he performs at. Take drumming lessons.
And you're doing that thing May 3rd, right?
May 3rd, Mexico City.
How do they get tickets?
Oh, that's a good question. It's going to be in Mexico City, so...
So just go to Mexico City on that
day.
Got to
go to Mexico City first. you know, I want to say Ticketmaster, but I don't know how. You know?
Well, you'll have it on your Instagram. You'll have it on your Instagram.
It is on Instagram.
Yeah, it's on your Instagram.
It's on Instagram right now. Domination Festival.
Yeah.
You need tickets, you hit me up. You got a big booty, I'll give you a pass.
Yeah.
A stage pass.
And if, a big and bo- also, if you have a big booty...
Not only that, we go to South America after that, May, throughout the rest of May. And then June, we do almost Eastern block of Europe.
Like,
Like Germany and Prague and Slovenia Budapest and Bucharest and on
so
and on.
So go on the website to look at the tour itinerary.
You can tour the tour, yeah.
Love you, man.
Love you more.
Love you so much. Yeah, I'm so happy you came.
I feel like I'm missing something.
Wait, no. Get it out.
End is here.
I have to do some announcements.
To our face.
Okay.
The Keep final curtain.
And then I'll say, so shout out to all the patrons.
I'm not done.
This week. Okay. No, but you do it. I'll do it. Shout out to the new patrons.
Scooby-Doo.
Nicholas Braun.
Of which I'm certain.
Andrew Hubbard. Damien Scarf. George B. David Stevens.
Hey, babe. I'm going to do it like Shammy, babe.
Shout out to Michael Martinez.
Candyman.
For going to StevieWeebyBandcamp.com.
Mr. Bird.
Please join our Patreon. If you want to support the show, go to Patreon.com/StevieWeeby. Instagram/QUANGOU.
Okay.
New vlog series out. Stevie's P.O. Box. Send all your stuff to 1425 North Cherokee. Stop it. North Cherokee Avenue, L.A., California, 90093. Okay, with that being said, it's time. Hey, will you re-sign this like on the board itself?
No, well, after. Now.
Okay, okay. No, with that being said, it's time.
Thanks for having me.
Dude,
I
come
really
on. I love you, dude. You know, I would have waited
like
forever. Chair. Yeah.
Like Tinder.
It's time for Lil Ray's World. Meow.
Welcome to Lil Ray's World Show. All I gotta say is kids' minds must grow. I got abducted by some aliens, dropped in snow. Whoa. Stuck into a world that I do not know. So join me in adventures now. And I promise not to have a cow. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey, hey. So welcome to my world. To all the boys and girls.
Welcome to Little Ray's World. Yeehaw!
Well, 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 what do we got here, man? Looks like a goddamn California roll. Is that what you are? So what you just told me, man, is you used to be a server at a sushi bar. And you went into the kitchen and you slipped on some miso soup, fell and cracked your head open and died. Is that correct? That's so damn sad, man. Listen, I never liked me some raw fish, but sometimes my wife and I would get some goddamn California rolls at the local spot where I used to live in Bryan, Texas. I won't eat you even though I'm hungry, but me and Beep wrote a song about you, man, and it goes like this, man.
This one's about Joel the California Roll, kids. Listen up. Joel the California Roll, you added to my toll of things I want to eat, but I have to let it go. A savage in the cold, just like my cold the troll. Hey, I'm no Billy Joel, don't know where I should go. This planet tends to glow, I'm sad and do I owe my livelihood to them? Do I have to sell my soul? What happened to you, Joel? Worked at a sushi bar, slipped on some miso soup, lighted in your working boots. Your day was just a loop, man, I think I got a poop. Another naked clown forced to do the hula hoop. Your head had hit the ground. All they said was, oops, you're a California roll, now without a clear pursuit. This world has got no loot, man, you better find your stoop. Relax like you were Snoop Dogg, time to straight regroup. Cause karma's what you owe, it's time for us to go. See you later, sayonara, peace to Joel the Roll. The California Roll, the California Roll, the California Roll, Joel the California Roll.
Join us next week or in 2 weeks or so for another episode of Little Ray's World, man. Make sure you go to StevieWeebyBandcamp.com and get some of that cool music. Let's get her done.